It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 94% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
Came in a snowstorm, too.
It's cute that they called this a snowstorm last night.
Look outside.
Yeah, I mean, it's snowing. I don't know that I'd call this a snowstorm.
I had enough to shovel this morning, and it's snowing again.
And I had to drive through it.
Yeah, so. And with us, for the first time in a while, since like June, is comic book historian Joe Pakovitz.
Hello, hello.
He's going to give us a history lesson.
Yep. He is. He's going to school him.
He's going to school us. It's adorable, like, the city of Chicago, for those listeners outside of the city, this is our first snowstorm this year for the season.
It is December.
No, I know, but it's pretty late in the year, right? We usually have this by like Halloween.
It snowed last week.
Yeah, it didn't stay.
Not like this, though.
If you listen to the news yesterday, you would have been like 9/11 was going to happen today or something. You know what I'm saying?
It's like
they blow this stuff out of proportion like it's this huge deal. And they're like, it's going to snow for 24 hours. There's going to be 12, 15 inches of snow. It snowed. The snow stayed. You had a shovel. It was not super great to drive home yesterday. But it's fine. It's like, this isn't any crazier than any other storm we've had. This is a very normal, regular, run-of-the-mill snowstorm.
I don't think anyone's ever downloaded this podcast to want to listen to the weather.
If anyone lives in Chicago, they're whatever.
So, moving on. This week is one of those big trailer weeks. It seems like every few months we have an episode where all we do is talk about the three or four trailers that come out. They seem to bunch up. It's like trailer season.
Yeah.
Probably because the Christmas movies are hitting.
Yep.
The last time we did this was probably summer. But Steven and I talked earlier in the week, and Steven said, hey, do you want to talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer? And I'm like, I don't know if we can talk about that trailer for an hour. And then Spider-Man hit. And then yesterday, War of the Planet of the Apes hit. And I'm like, well, this is enough to talk about.
Transformers 5 trailer hit.
Doctor Who trailer hit.
Yeah, the commercial for the Doctor Who Christmas special hit.
Yeah.
Which is okay, but honestly, we haven't had any Doctor Who in a year, so that's kind of exciting. Their Fathom Events is also going to show it in the movie theaters, which is what they did for the last two Batman directed DVDs, and they do it for riff tracks every now and then. So, it looks like, okay, it's another episode of Doctor Who. It's also a superhero episode, which is not quite his genre.
No, and it's...
And it's a made-up superhero. I don't like that.
And at Chicago TARDIS this year, they screened the offshoot Class, which had a brief appearance in it, and it's not good.
Yeah, I mentioned in one of the panels, and thanks everybody who listened to the panel last week. There's two more coming. And one of the panels, probably the one I'm going to run soon, we talk about how much bandwidth you have. And I'm like, I'm probably not going to watch Class. I don't have time. And to hear it's not great. All
this
right,
is like a separate show?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a spinoff.
It's a spinoff.
Of
Doctor Who.
Another one like Torchwood?
Yeah, but none of those are running anymore. Yeah,
right.
Torchwood ended. Sarah Jane Adventures ended. So this is like, this would be the first spinoff like of the 12th Doctor era.
Yeah. Gotcha. And it's basically Doctor Who meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right.
So if that excites you, go nuts.
Buffy the Doctor Slayer.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
It wasn't good.
Yeah, I couldn't quite lock into Sarah Jane Adventures. There came a time about 5 years ago where I realized kid shows aren't talking to me anymore. And there was a long time where they were. I didn't feel like I was going to click no. I can't get into The Flash. We've had that discussion.
Second season got put on Netflix, and I put it out the store, and I couldn't
watched like three of them. I'm home again, and I have time, and I did about three of them, and I'm like, yeah, it's this, and I just turned it off.
Yeah, and it's now devolving into the kind of show that I was afraid it was going to be in the first season, where it's all young adult nonsense, and you're just like, okay, I'm done.
It's this 24 episode bullshit again. I mean, we've talked about this before. As soon as I see a show that's 24 episodes, it's like, I don't have that kind of time.
Yeah, the two
too many shows that are way shorter that are way better.
Yeah, the two network shows I still watch are Gotham and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And every week I see them on the DVR and I go,
"You're hate watching."
Okay, I'm hate watching Gotham. I'm bored watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
But you know, when every time I step back from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I think about the season arc, I go, "Oh, that was a good story." Like they just wrapped up Ghost Rider. And I was like, "Yeah, that was good. It was better than either Ghost Rider movie."
Yeah.
But during each individual episode, I was just like, "What's on eBay right now?"
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, those are the things we don't like. let's get into Spider-Man right away because that was the big one. I happened to catch the premiere on Jimmy Kimmel, which of course is owned. ABC is owned by Disney, so he's Conan's not getting these big.
Yeah,
fans.
They're gonna help their boy.
Yeah.
Out.
So, but they had a big event where they had the running of a Spider-Man, and they had like 100 guys run into the studio dressed as Spider-Man, and one was Tom Holland, and they had to Where's Waldo find him.
Yeah.
And then
they were all wearing the movie suit.
No, they were just all wearing like a comic suit, but all the same suit.
And Tom Holland was in there.
That's
so awesome.
It wasn't as good as the Letterman sending the Spider-Man into Jamba Juice.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, that was great. We actually ran that on the Facebook page when Letterman ended. He did a prank of how many Spider-Men can fit in a Jamba Juice. And they had no idea it was going to happen. They had a camera outside. And actually, my cousin, who's a production assistant, is one of the Spider-Men. Because he worked on Letterman. And but basically, it's just a shot outside of Jamba Juice, and they just guys just wander in, just stand around the Jamba Juice, and then just every now and then, Dave just goes, "All right, send in another Spider-Man," and then they ran out of costumes, so he's like, "Okay, send in a pirate and a wizard now." So Jimmy Kimmel's wasn't quite as good. They just had them run across the street and run into the theater, but then, like he said, they were trying to find Tom Holland. He said who could do a backflip, and Tom Holland did the backflip that got him the role. And you know what? I just like this kid. He was in Civil War for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just really like him.
But it's like even him in the trailer, it's weird. I was going to be like, if you want to avoid spoilers, it's not a thing that people worry about.
I mean,
no, I'm saying everyone would
be,
have seen
to be fair,
the
these are all trailers. They're all on our Facebook page. You can watch them all now. We will be talking about the trailers from beginning to end, but they're trailers.
Yeah. Oh, and they have like 300 million views already. So you're probably, no one who is listening to this podcast hasn't seen the trailers. Yeah. The kid's just really cool. It's like this is the best version of Spider-Man I think we've ever seen.
Well, they've really nailed the tone.
Yeah.
They've nailed the tone from the original Ditko Lee issues.
And that's why Sony gave it to Marvel, because they couldn't nail the tone anymore. It became clear that Raimi was the one who knew it, and Sony didn't know it, and once he was gone...
Yeah, funny how just owning a thing doesn't mean that you understand anything about it, you know?
Exactly.
All these dumbass producers sitting around, "Why can't we make Spider-Man work?" It's because you're all a bunch of fucking morons.
The same reason, why aren't we making Batman fighting Superman work?
Right. Or why can't we make a Fantastic Four movie that works?
Right, you need somebody who cares, and obviously, handing it to Kevin Feige and those guys, they care about all the Marvel characters. And... the tone really felt right, where I felt the Raimi movies got the look really right. But honestly, I was never crazy about Tobey Maguire or Kirsten Dunst. There's very, very clunky moments in all of those movies. Yeah. There's always some like wince-worthy moments, usually involving Kirsten Dunst.
Well, they
always.
And then I was watching the Mark Webb movies again, the Andrew Garfield ones, and he's good, but that tone is so off. Where it's like everything's dark, everything's serious, and like he's joking around more than Tobey Maguire, but he's mumbling all the jokes. They're not really landing.
Yeah. I think he was a better...
Whoops. Please stand by.
Right. Yes. I think he was
Stop touching the microphone.
I think he was a better Spider-Man and Peter Parker. But like we said, he's like the Pierce Brosnan of Star Wars or whatchamacallit?
Yeah, he's Pierce Brosnan of Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
He was perfect for the role, and they put him in the worst movies.
Yeah. Well, they finally nailed he finally feels like he's in high school again. I mean, that was my big knock against the previous two franchises. He looks like it. He acts like it. He sounds like it. He's kind of got that breathless, oh my God, what next? And the trailer really nailed that, where he's talking to Tony and Tony's being totally condescending to him.
Well, he's really eager in a way that that Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire weren't. Right. Tobey was very introverted, and Andrew Garfield was kind of detached.
Yeah.
And more antisocial. I remember them saying at the time, "Oh, he's not so nerdy as he is brooding." And then I was watching Amazing Spider-Man 1 yesterday. I'm like, yeah, he's unlikable. He's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, the original Lee Ditko run, he wanted to fit in. He wanted to be a normal kid. He wanted to be popular. He was, you know, he was that, how you felt in high school.
Right. And then in the Romita era, he is popular, but the problem is he's overextended.
Right.
Because, you know, he, like, the high school bully is his friend.
Right.
And the rich kid is his friend.
And the model is his girlfriend.
Yeah. And basically every...
He's like, cool. He's like driving a motorcycle around town. Yeah. It's like he was a cool character.
And, yeah. Once later. Romita started drawing it, all the girls looked like Betty and Veronica.
Yeah.
So there was not... I mean, even Aunt May looked good.
Yeah.
There was not a single hot girl. When Ditko drew her, like, Betty Brant was the mousiest girl ever. Yeah. And that's who he was interested in.
But that's what rings true. You know, that's, again, that's authentic. That's why the book originally took off, because people could relate to it.
Yeah, but Tom Holland definitely has, I think, the right energy.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, a little ahead of himself. He's a little nervous. And it also, you enhance that by dropping him into the Avengers.
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of always how he stands out, even more than in his own book. Anytime Spider-Man runs into other heroes, and I was just reading some of the Miles Morales issues, and it's the same dynamic.
Yeah.
Anytime he runs into, like, the big heroes, he gets tongue-tied and he steps all over himself.
Yeah,
and he's
he
trying
starts
to
fangirling
yeah.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Which is what you would do if you are 17 and all of a sudden you're, like, Thor shows up.
Yeah. It's one of the, I can't remember what book it was in, but it was, they were talking about, this might have been, like, Marvel Knights, maybe Spider-Man or something, that Spider-Man doesn't like being around the Avengers or the Fantastic Four. You know, Johnny Storm's one thing.
Like Johnny, yeah.
But being around big groups of heroes not only throws off his spider sense, but it's like, he's like, it's like being back in high school and hanging out with the varsity football team. He's like, why would I don't have anything in common with these guys. I don't save the world. Like, I'm just a kid from Queens. And it's like, here's Captain America and the rest of the guys, all veterans of the Kree-Skrull War. And I'm supposed to be like, what? Tell him I chased the boomerang around the jewelry store.
Well, his,
you know?
his first encounter with the Fantastic Four was like that.
Yeah.
You know?
He shows up looking for a job, right?
Yeah, he's just, and that's the thing. That's a great example. I don't think it came off that way initially. And I don't think it was intended that way, because it was more of like, it's like, get a reason for Spider-Man to want to meet the Fantastic Four. But what's better about it is that's Peter Parker thinking that's the way you meet the Fantastic Four. You just show up and you ask for a job. And then robot alarms attack you. Right, but then later he's kicking himself because he's so embarrassed because he made such a jackass out of himself around all the other, his peers, essentially.
Well, if that's not high school, what is?
Right, exactly. Right. That's what's so perfect.
And that hasn't quite been in the book so much. And I'm not the biggest fan of high school Peter. I feel like it works, but honestly, I didn't grow up with high school Peter. I mean, Peter graduated high school in like 1966.
Right.
You know, when I started reading him, he had dropped out of grad school. So I'm used to the Peter that has his own apartment and is broke and is just selling pictures of the Daily Bugle just to pay his rent. And that's kind of my favorite Peter. But I will say, to put him in high school definitely gives him the contrast that no one else in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has.
Right.
Like, we don't have anybody this young in the movies, so that makes sense. And it does feel like high school again. And I'm hoping the high school drama stuff is kept to a minimum, because I just don't care. like, I don't want to see a lot of, like, him falling asleep in class and trying to date some girl in the cafeteria. I feel like we've done that.
Right.
But that youthful energy seems like a great
idea. Well, even if they go there, first of all, I trust them to do it right. And secondly, you don't have, you know, 30-year-olds trying to play people half their age.
Right.
And he's obviously done his homework. They just had an article online about how he went undercover in high school to get the timing and the feeling and the sensation right again. Because you forget that.
Yeah. I haven't.
It's cool.
It still haunts me.
I don't mind them using, like, doing the younger stuff too, because we know, how long has Robert Downey Jr. been Iron Man? How many years?
Yeah, well, as we said this before, Kevin Feige said that the Marvel Cinematic Universe takes place in real time.
Right.
So he's been Iron Man for 9 years.
And that's what I'm saying, is that 9 years, this kid won't be in high school anymore, because if it takes place in a real year, whatever year they put him in high school, sophomore, junior, senior, whatever, the next time the movie comes out, it'll be that much more longer. So he'll either have graduated high school, or he'll be in college, or maybe we'll get to that point where he is living in an apartment in New York on his own, selling posters.
And that's Marvel's plan, is, you know, as Robert Downey and Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth get more expensive, the idea is to cycle them out, not to recast those roles, but to get people caring about the Black Panther and Doctor Strange and right. and Spider-Man, their version of Spider-Man, to the point where you don't miss Iron Man once he's gone.
Right, yeah. And with this franchise, I fully expect the high this to be this is the high school movie. Then you're going to get a college movie. Then you're going to get a transition from college to young adult movie, and then maybe you know, 9 years down the road, we're going to get, you know, the movie that you can relate to where he's the struggling young adult trying to make ends meet and getting fucked over by the fact that he has to go play Spider-Man every now and
then. Yeah, maybe. And Tom Holland is signed to six Marvel movies. The Spider-Man movie being a trilogy. So there's at least two more movies coming that are connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we
assume Infinity.
And then the other three movies are other Marvel movies that he will appear in. We've done one. So Civil War counts. Yeah, we are assuming that it's going to be the two Avengers movies. And then, you know, there's always the chance to re-up. It's like when people say, oh, after Phase 2, Marvel's done. It's like, no, their plans are done.
Right.
They'll come up with more plans.
Well, that's the thing. It's like Phase 2 ended, right, with Civil War.
The Avengers the Avengers movies end the phases.
So Age of Ultron ended Phase 2?
Right. We're in Phase 3.
Right.
And then the Infinity War will end Avengers.
Phase 3. And so we're all supposed to think, oh, that's it. Because like Brittany was asking me this. We were talking about this on the show before, I think, where she's like, what do they do after Phase 3? And they fight Thanos and there's nothing else they're leading up to. I'm like, well, they'll just, why wouldn't they keep going? Captain Marvel is coming out, so that'll get
And they keep changing the plans, because when a movie... When a movie does well, they announce a sequel. We're going to get Ant-Man and the Wasp. We weren't going to get that originally. We weren't going to get Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, they're adapting.
Yeah, so...
Spider-Man, when they started this, wasn't in the works.
No, Thor was supposed to be the summer movie, and it got pushed back to fall.
Right.
Well, I mean, you also have new properties that are coming up, and just look at the comic books. You know, we can probably look forward to a, you know, Defenders... Or a Champions. I mean, think about the Champions franchise.
Well, Defenders we're getting on Netflix.
Yeah, because
we have that.
You'll have Miles. You'll have Ms. Marvel, who is just blowing it up in the comics. You know, you have Cyclops, although I don't think they can use him because of the movie
Fox.
Rights.
Right.
But, you know, you can play around with that and play with the teams to create the next, you know, teen group that's coming up.
And that's actually a good point, Joe. If they wanted to, you know, we're talking about way in the future, they start replacing these guys or moving these guys around. If Marvel still is behind a book like Champions and the readers are behind it like they are, I mean, the second issue, that book's selling great. That group of superheroes, they all have the rights to. They can come up with the Amadeus Cho to make him the Hulk. They have the rights to the new Spider-Man. In fact, did anyone notice in the Amazing the Spider-Man trailer that his roommate who finds out he's Spider-Man in the trailer... That's Ganke.
No, it isn't. This is really weird. That was a rumor. And ironically, somebody commented that on our Facebook page of, hey, look, that's Ganke. And I didn't know who Ganke was. And then I actually got to that point in the comics where Ganke is the best friend of
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, right. Ganke is the best friend of Miles Morales.
Yeah.
And I hadn't read any of that. And then they came out and said, no, that's actually Ned Leeds.
Huh.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so they said it's...
So Ned Leeds is going to be like a high school
Ned
buddy
Ned Leeds
of
is
his?
Like his friend, yeah.
In the comics, Ned Leeds was a reporter at the Bugle, right?
Right.
Right. He
was married to Betty Brant, and they thought he was the Hobgoblin for a while.
Right.
Okay. But he wasn't.
He wasn't because they said he was the Hobgoblin after Roger Stern had gone to DC, and then Roger Stern came back to Marvel and went, no, he wasn't.
Yeah.
But then you think of all the properties that they could... cast that they haven't even touched yet. There's not, guys. I just mentioned Ms. Marvel. She could probably handle her own franchise. We haven't even seen Captain Marvel.
Yeah, well, there's...
We haven't seen female Thor.
Well, there's a lot of rumors.
There's so many places you can
go.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That.
I don't know if we're going to get the reboot versions. I think that might be a little complicated. It's I mean, we've gotten some of the 90s guys because we've gotten War Machine.
Yeah.
We don't have female Thor, but we also haven't seen Thunderstrike.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah, I think, like, Beta Ray Bill is something we should definitely see at some point. Like...
I feel like if we do, he's not going to be Thor. I feel like he could show up in Guardians of the Galaxy and just be the alien.
Right, because the only other thing you could do with Beta Ray Bill is Ragnarok.
I think that's what I'm saying, if you put him in Ragnarok.
If you want to hew closely to the Simonson run.
Yeah, but I think that's too complicated for movie audiences to...
I wouldn't add Beta Ray Bill in a movie you already have... the Hulk.
I wouldn't add Beta Ray Bill to a movie you already have Thor.
I don't know.
Right, I think it's too much to have two of the same character. The reason they've done in the comics is that it was decades of stories before they changed that guy. You know, I wouldn't want Azrael to be in a Batman movie.
No, but I'm saying, like, they put War Machine in Iron Man 2 and no one batted an eye.
Yeah, I feel like War Machine, Rhodey was already in it because he was already a supporting character for a long time. And I feel like War Machine is more of a sidekick than a replacement.
But I wouldn't do Beta Ray Bill as the replacement. I would do him as he should fill the same vacuum War Machine does. He's Thor's space buddy. You know, so Thor 3, which did anyone see the international poster for Thor 3 is out? It's like artwork. And it's Thor with his helmet on, holding like a huge sword. And the Hulk's behind him holding a big axe and has that gladiator hat on with like the red.
Planet Hulk?
Yeah. The Planet Hulk. So yeah, it's like Thor and him are going to be like gladiators.
This movie is Hulk, Thor and Hulk team up. This is going to be like, I feel like Hulk has as big a role in this as Iron Man had in Civil War.
Yes. I think I'd say bigger. I think he's going to be a buddy cop movie.
Yeah, because the other two Thor movies didn't work as well as the other Marvel movies. No. They're fine. I enjoy them both the first time. And I tell you, I put the Blu-rays on. I don't think I've finished either one of them on Blu-ray. I get about an hour and 20 minutes in and, like, at the 45-minute mark, I'm doing something else in the room, and by an hour 15, I'm out of the room.
Yeah, I put on Thor 1, and I instantly skip to where he comes to Earth, because that's where the movie gets good.
Yeah.
It's a shame, because I watch them still, but they're definitely the weakest out of the Marvel franchise, hands down.
And I would say, I mean, this can start an argument, because I know, Joe, you're a big fan, but I would say Thor is one of the weaker major characters of Marvel. They've had to relaunch his book a lot more than some of the other guys.
You have one golden run.
Yeah.
One run that everybody undisputedly, even if you're not a Thor fan, you love, and that's a Simonson run. Yeah. Even the Straczynski run was very good.
Nowhere near the Simonson run.
It's not the Simonson run.
And that's the thing. They do articles on it.
You have more Iron Man runs that are great, and Iron Man's not known as being one of the classic books.
Exactly.
But I think that's the thing. It's a character that, when he's done right, is a phenomenal character. I just think he's like Superman. It's a really hard character to nail, but when they nail it, it works so well.
Right.
Simonson's run's a great example. Straczynski did it. The Stan Lee and Jack Kirby stuff was awesome. Like, all that crazy, you know, ridiculous man guy.
Well, the Stan Lee
and
Jack Kirby stuff,
stuff,
once they stopped trying to make him Superman and actually leaned into mythology,
thing
just opened
up. The Tales of Asgard stuff, is as soon as they go into space and go into
because it's all that crazy stuff. How many of his villains when they were like, they had Thor like go after communists for a couple of years.
Yeah, was like going to Southeast Asia and fighting the radioactive man.
Yeah,
god. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, but like guys like the radioactive man, the Wrecker, like as a kid, I didn't know they fought Thor. Yeah. I figured they were Avengers villains.
That's what I thought.
You know, and like Loki and Frost Giants and the Executioner and Enchantress, those made sense.
Or exactly. He works best when he's in his own, you know, Asgardian realm. He, you know, when he comes to, in the books, when he comes to Earth, things get kind of lame because he's just too damn powerful.
Right. And at least they remove the Don Blake stuff. We don't have him losing his hammer and changing into a skinny guy.
Right. And yet, conversely, in the movies, he works best when he's on Earth.
Yeah.
At least the way the Asgardian stories have been directed and filmed and written thus far. He's more powerful when he's on
which
Earth.
Worries me for Thor 3 if the whole movie's going to take place out in space with him running around with the
Hulk.
Well,
that's neither Earth nor Asgard, so it's kind of open. And we've established what space is with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
So if you look at it that way of like Thor and Hulk show up in the Guardians of the Galaxy universe.
Right. That works a lot.
That's the Marvel's. That's Marvel's outer space.
Yeah.
That could totally work.
Yeah, and it frees them from all the Wagnerian stiltedness that Asgard seems to, they seem to feel that if they go to Asgard, they have to have this big space opera Wagnerian thing, and it just doesn't work.
Well, yeah, they haven't figured it out.
Well, Asgard's been nothing but exposition in those two films. Yeah. They haven't really done anything. They have a feast, and then they talk about politics.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
and they get their ass kicked by Dark Elves.
It's right. But it's like Asgard is like Rivendell in Lord of the Rings. Like, anytime they went to Rivendell, they did some exposition, they got out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Asgard's the same way. We haven't really had any fights in Asgard or really anything major happening. But all of this is a million miles away from the Spider-Man trailer, which, by the way, I loved every single moment of, and I watched it over and over and over again. Yeah. And
Michael
I,
Keaton as the Vulture.
Yeah. I love this idea in the, every possible way.
Yeah, yes. We were talking about this at the store, and this is what's really cool about it, is they showed you and John, you saw the pictures of the Toy Fair figure. Vulture has a terrible costume. He's in a green long johns.
You mean in the Ditko costume, yeah.
Yes, he has wings, and he decided to wear a fur collar on his neck and no helmet. If you get on one of those little things with the two wheels that drive you around downtown, they give you a helmet. The Vulture is an old man flying around the city at like 180 miles per hour without a fucking hat on.
But you know, the Vulture was originally supposed to be in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 4.
Yes, and it was supposed to be Malkovich.
You were supposed to be John Malkovich. You know, Raimi would have put him with no helmet and a fur collar.
And I loathe that we haven't seen that. This is a good consolation prize. He's in a flight jacket with a fur collar, and he wears a helmet that's shaped like a beak.
Yeah.
And he has goggles that look like bird eyes.
It's got a little bit of like Stark Tech look to it.
Yeah. Awesome.
The wings
great.
Are so huge that, as you said, they showed the Marvel Legends figure. That the Build-A-Figure in the set is just the wings.
That's fucking crazy.
The Vulture himself is one figure, but each figure in that set, and there's usually seven or eight in a set.
Yeah.
Each figure in that set is going to have a piece of his wings. They're gargantuan.
And see, this is what we were talking about, is when Civil War came out, and maybe we had this conversation. I can never keep track of who I talk to because there's too many of you fucking people on this planet.
That's why we recorded this one.
So the Spider-Man already beat up Vulture. When he beats Falcon, that's the Vulture. They have the same, they're the same guy. Do you know what I'm saying? They're the same guy. They're the guy that flies around with wings. So that's why in the movie, the Vulture's wings are massive. Because the guy has to have like an arsenal or else what's the point? He already beat up Falcon and Bucky on his own. He fought the two of them and beat them on his own. How's he supposed to fight a guy like the Vulture and not just toast this dude? Well, make him these huge fucking helicopter wings on him. It's like, we're going to have like...
And also
and
the Vulture is going to be a character who's not going to pull his punches the way Falcon did.
Right. But I'm saying it's just like
the one line we get in the trailer is Michael Keaton saying, I'm going to kill you and everyone you care about.
Yeah.
Falcon did not say that to Ant-Man.
Right. And see, that's the thing. So it's interesting that they're going to really kind of make him. And it's great that it's Michael Keaton because he's a good actor.
He was Batman. Let's not lose the symbolism that a DC hero becomes a Marvel villain. There's something about that I just enjoy.
I love that. And it's the same kind of thing, like if Doctor Strange and Iron Man are ever on screen together, somebody has to say, no shit, Sherlock, and the two of them need to like look over at him.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need that.
You can't deny
that's way too meta. And I don't want that breaks it for me.
Do it.
I don't want a facial hairs bro moment.
I want it so bad.
No, I don't want that at all.
But what I'm saying is like... hopefully, we will finally get another good Marvel villain. Because all the Marvel villains, they suck.
They've been weak.
It's like you've got Loki.
I always say the best villain they've had, everybody says Loki, but I honestly think the best villain they had was Obadiah Stane. Jeff Bridges was fantastic in that first film, but they killed him and there was nowhere else he could go. You don't have Obadiah Stane like... teaming up with Loki.
It's a little silly at the end when he's like, I'm gonna run into this suit and fight you. It's like he's a great actor.
I buy everything that happens in that first movie.
Goofy.
No, it's
but
great.
He was perfectly smarmy and perfectly, you know, when he did the heel turn. That's when you were
and
like,
you don't
okay.
see it coming.
Right. Well, I mean, you do because we read comic books.
Yes and no, because they could have recast it in the same way Ned Leeds is now in high school with Peter.
And they haven't been afraid to shake it up either. Well, like you don't know for sure.
Yeah, but I think like that was the first movie we didn't know.
But like Baron Mordo in Doctor Strange, he's like his sidekick for the whole time. And then spoilers for Doctor Strange, the post-credit sequence, he's like, yeah, now I'm a villain.
No, but
because
see,
Baron Mordo's always been his villain.
But I actually like that a lot. I think that actor's really good.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
I'm hoping that we're now, from Doctor Strange on, I think Age of Ultron was probably the last one where Marvel's like, look, we really suck at villains. We've got Loki.
Yeah, because Ultron should have worked.
He should have. That's what I'm saying. They're casting great people. I don't know if you guys know who played Ronan, Lee Pace.
Yeah, Lee Pace.
He's a great actor.
He was in The Hobbit.
He was in The Hobbit. He was one of the elves. He was in the show Pushing Daisies, which he was phenomenal in.
He was in that AMC show, the Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah, so he's really good, but he didn't do shit as Ronan. He was awful.
Well, they completely wasted Christopher Eccleston in Dark World.
Right,
I mean,
same thing.
What a waste.
That's what I'm saying. So
and Christopher Eccleston did that instead of the Doctor Who 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt forever.
I think Marvel's great characters as the villains. Like, what's his name as the Red Skull? These are all great actors.
Yeah,
they never give the villains anything to do. So what I'm hoping is that with Baron Mordo on, it seems like, okay, Baron Mordo is cool because they're kind of making it like Green Lantern was supposed to do with Sinestro. It's not great if the movie starts and Sinestro's already a bad guy.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
Green Lantern had the exact same post-credit sequence.
No, I know, but I'm saying
Doctor Strange.
But I'm saying the idea was right. You make Sinestro a good guy, make them buddies in the first movie, like Training Day in space, just like Doctor Strange and Baron Mordo work together to fight the bad guy. Then they have a difference of opinion. So when he comes back, it's like, hey, we used to be pals, right? And it's like, no, dude, I'm on a totally different track now. That really does work. So I'm hoping with that and with Michael Keaton as the Vulture, we're starting to get, we have really interesting heroes. We need interesting villains or we're going to get bored.
I think Marvel's problem with villains has been their sense of humor is so strong, especially with Robert Downey Jr. setting the tone, is that they always want comic relief in there, but for the villains, it undercuts it. And that's what happened to Ultron. I watched Age of Ultron again last week, and everyone was in the house, and there was a lot of noise going on, so we had the subtitles on the whole time. And just reading the script of what he had to say, it was terrifying. But then the way Whedon directed it, and James Spader has a ton of personality, he was always undercutting that with his humor, so you were never afraid of him. Right. And they've done that with a lot of their villains. They've done it with Loki. They haven't really made them a threat, and they keep promising Thanos is going to be the big villain, but all he's done so far is just sit on the throne
and tell people what to do.
Not do anything.
And maybe he will. You know, I'm in preparation for the Infinity War. I'm reading the Jim Starlin. They recently came out of the Captain Marvel, Jim Starlin, Captain Marvel trade. So it's all the Jim Starlin introducing Thanos in the Iron Man 55, mm-hmm. and then the Cosmic Cube shit, and then it ends with the death of Captain Marvel. Then I'm going to read Infinity Gauntlet, the omnibus, which has all the lead up to Thanos coming back from the dead after Captain Marvel kills him.
Those Silver Surfer issues are great.
Yeah,
like
that's
Ron Lim artwork.
Yeah,
it's
really cool. And then it'll do Thanos getting the gauntlet, then it'll do Infinity Gauntlet, then the aftermath. And Thanos has the potential to be an awesome villain. He's for as much as a ripoff of Darkseid as he is, he's a good villain. And Josh Brolin is a good actor. So it's just like, it should work.
And the design works.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing them make him snarky. Like, you don't want to see both the hero and the villain snarking at each other.
And they've done that a lot.
They've done it too much.
And you're right. Their movies are very snarky. They're very lighthearted. And that's all good, great and good. And that should absolutely be the tone of their movies going forward. When they get to Infinity Gauntlet and Thanos, if he kills half the universe, though, that should be a very dark movie.
Yeah, they haven't had a scary villain yet.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons I think Jeff Bridges works so much is that the betrayal is scary. Because you trust him, because it's just Jeff Bridges being Jeff Bridges for an hour and a half.
He's so charming.
Yeah,
he's so charming.
When he turns on you, it smacks you in the face, and that scares you. But, like, I didn't find Loki scary. You know, I didn't...
No, but I think at least Loki was he's a very interesting character.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is I just want villains that there's something more going on with them than just, I'm the bad guy version of you, like every other villain has been.
Well, the thing about Loki is that he and Thor have that brotherly love-hate relationship. So he's not going to be completely scary in the way that a Thanos or a Darkseid is scary.
Right.
Yeah, but so Marvel just needs to lean into that, and we know Michael Keaton can.
Yeah.
But we also know Michael Keaton can be really funny, so then it all depends on which way they decide to play him. And from this trailer, it looks like they're playing him scary, and so far it's really working.
Yeah, it looks good, because it looks like he's going to be the no-nonsense, maybe a little bloodthirsty Vulture.
Yeah, there's nothing goofy, and there's nothing goofy about that suit. There's nothing goofy.
He looks cool. Like I said, the design of the suit, they found a way to make... That's what I love about it. They find a way to take the comic. It's like the Spider-Man suit, the Iron Man suit, the Captain America. They gave us versions of those suits that look just like the comic. They fucking put a hat on Thor, for Christ's sakes. I mean, it's really cool. And that's a great... That Vulture suit's cool. They found a way... All right, well, he has a collar that's like made of feathers like a bird. That's really dumb. But if he flies around, put him in a leather flight jacket with the fur collar, and it looks... it has the same effect visually.
What a movie forces you to do is it forces you to make it more believable than you have to be in a comic.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, the second wave of Spider-Man movies, I think that went too far in trying to be realistic.
Yeah.
Like the Rhino, that just did not work for me.
Oh my God, we watched that again.
So bad. And that's the thing. I think they're, you know, that comes out when we're on our fifth Transformers movie. So they're like, well, make it a giant Transformer. It's like, I don't know that that's the right move to do. It didn't work for me.
And again, is a reason why Marvel's doing this. We watched that again not too long ago, and I watched it with Ben, and I took Ben to it when it came out, and he did not remember any of it. And when he saw Paul Giamatti as the Rhino, he was like, just like, wait, what? This is the worst thing I've ever seen. and I'm like, but you already saw this. He's like, I don't remember this, and this is – and it hit him like – it hit him as hard as if it was a total surprise. And it was like, we already saw it in the trailer. There was supposed to be a Hot Toys figure. I believe it got canceled.
Yeah.
But like, we saw that image a lot. And he saw it in the movies. And it was such a forgettable movie that it
like
just smacked him again.
Doing a Rhino impression. So he knew about it.
Yeah. And he didn't even do that. He used his bad Russian accent.
And,
Paul Giamatti didn't even do Paul Giamatti as a Rhino.
But the thing is this like... how old is Ben? He's like 10?
Nine-year-old,
and he went to see a Spider-Man movie, and he said that was the worst thing I've ever seen.
And he forgot it. He banished it from his consciousness.
Right. How bad do you have to be at making a Spider-Man movie if a fucking nine-year-old doesn't like it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're nine. You like everything.
Well, you know, and it reminds me of 2012. I think I tweeted at the time that... maybe it was 2012 or it might have been 2014, was that Marvel Studios is so good that there was a summer where a Spider-Man movie and an X-Men movie came out and no one cared.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, those are Marvel properties. Those are the big Marvel properties.
Yeah. It's fucking crazy. Yeah, we're living in weird times.
So speaking of that, we're living in times where the obscure characters are big and the big characters are obscure. We also got the trailer to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And
this Guardians is probably the franchise from Marvel I have the most faith in, which is silly because we've only had one movie, but that movie in tone, I think now we are kind of like, yeah, it was good, but when that came out, that was probably, I mean, that was radically different. It was definitely still felt like a Marvel movie, but the tone of that movie just seems so different than any of the other movies that had come from Marvel up
because
to that point.
They do such a good job of finding the genre, and the genre for Guardians of the Galaxies is your Errol Flynn action adventure movie, swashbuckler, where he's joking around and he's fighting the bad guys, and they captured that sense of fun. I mean, it's just the one word. If you had to just sum up Guardians of the Galaxy movie in one word, it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, I think with the second movie, bigger budget, it did better than I think Marvel anticipated it was going to do.
It was a gigantic hit.
It was huge. All those, I mean, that book is sells like crazy. All those actors got a huge bump. Chris Pratt is the guy in Hollywood now.
They've been talking about him for Indiana Jones for the last year or two.
Right. You don't get people talking about you for Indiana
and
Jones.
You remember, he was the fat guy on Parks and Rec before this movie happened.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is people won't even remember that. He'll get remembered for this in Jurassic Park now. And what's really crazy is that this trailer, we talked about this before we started recording, but it doesn't have to tell us what the movie's about. It's here's this second Guardians of the Galaxy movie. There's no plot in that trailer.
No.
It's just here's a bunch of them doing things that they're
characters.
We just
see all the characters again, and that's all you have to do to sell this movie because that movie is so beloved that you basically have to go, remember those five characters you liked in the first one? They're all back. They're all doing stuff.
Yeah, here's
more
of them doing what you love them to do.
They're all being true to character, and that's all you need. And I spent most of that trailer going, wait, weren't we supposed to have other new Marvel characters in? And then it's like the last 20 seconds we see Mantis.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, there we go.
And it's amazing that this is probably the only movie property where you really look at it and it rose from nothing. I mean, John, you and I, when we first started going to the small cons and picking up comic books, I was finding Guardians of the Galaxy books in the 25-cent bin.
Hmm.
And now it's this huge property, and they're getting omnibuses.
And they had a clean slate with it. Like, they used almost nothing from the books. They weren't tied in the way that even something like Doctor Strange, who's D-level hero, but it's like, well, this is his origin. Here are his villains. Here's his mentor.
Yeah.
Like, let's show all of – we need to show all of that. We need to be true to that. Guardians of the Galaxy was just like, all right, here's just a list. It's almost like Deadpool where – Deadpool, they picked Negasonic Teenage Warhead because it was a Grant Morrison character that named after a Monster Magnet song. Yeah. And they and Ryan Reynolds liked the name. And then they just they were just like, we'll just give it to just create a mutant that fits that. They didn't even use the character from the book.
Right.
And Guardians of the Galaxy is kind of like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Star-Lord was kind of a Green Lantern-y sort of character. He was like a knockoff of Nova.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never, I mean, that was their property for, you know, outer space cosmic stuff when they didn't really know what to do with it anymore. After the, you know, it's 1970s big space opera stuff that you got in Fantastic Four, for example. Even the X-Men were out in space with the Shi'ar Empire and
yeah,
all that nonsense.
Yeah, they did tons of that
and that
stuff.
All ends by
all
the early 80s.
All Four stuff right. was in space because that's where right. the Guardians show up. They show up in, like, an issue of Four. He's out in, like, space in the future or something.
Right,
yeah.
And then they're like, yeah, these are the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then they do the reboot in, like, 2001 or 2 when they're like, all right, now the Guardians is the Groot, which is like a Jack Kirby monster from the 1950s.
And Rocket Raccoon, who was a joke in the 70s.
Yeah. It was like Howard the Duck. He came around the same time.
Right. They kind of just threw a bunch of goofy characters together and were like, yeah, these are the new Guardians. And it just worked, you know? And like I said, this trailer doesn't show us any plot, none of the villains, barely any of the new Guardians. It's like, fucking Nathan Fillion's in this movie. What's his name? It's going to be Ego the Living Planet. And this movie's just, the trailer's just like, hey, here's Chris Pratt getting embarrassed and talking about boners. You know? It's like, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's Kurt Russell is playing
Ego. Yeah, Kurt Russell's going to be in it. And it's just like, none of that set needs to be in the trailer.
You don't need it. You know what? We'll get that in the spring. We'll get that when we're getting close to the movie. We'll see what this movie's about. Right. But basically, all you have to know is that the tone's still right, that they didn't move away from
what's
it.
Crazy.
And that's what they were selling. They're saying that tone sells itself.
Yeah. When,
you don't need anything else.
When Guardians 1 ended and we're like, oh, there's a little Groot in like a little pot, we were like, oh, well, the next movie I just assume we'd have full-grown Groot again.
We don't.
And they were like, no, we tried to make it better than regular Groot. Now we have baby Groot. And it's like, that's going to be the hottest shit in a year. All anyone's going to be talking about is baby Groot.
Yeah, because everybody went nuts for baby Groot in the first movie.
Right. Now it's the whole movie of him as a little baby screaming.
Baby Groot merchandise after that movie ended, they had the little dancing baby Groot thing. People bought the shit out of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have one.
So crazy. And that's the thing. It's like, this is going to be that times like 10.
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
When does that come out? Is that the earlier?
I think it's that.
Is it May?
Then Spider-Man.
Which is...
Then Thor.
Which is amazing. Well, Thor is going to be in the Doctor Strange slot. That's going to be close to winter. But that amazed me because when I saw the Spider-Man trailer and it said it's coming out in mid-July, I was like, wait a minute. This is... May are your big, big movies. And then that's... All of those wind down around July. And then you get a second wave and the second wave is not quite as big. So we had the first Guardians in July because they didn't think it was going to be that big.
Right. Yeah. And now that has the May slot.
That has the May slot and Spider-Man has the July slot. Every Spider-Man movie had a May slot. All five of them were May.
Free Comic Book Day launched with Spider-Man, the first movie with Sam Raimi. That was the first Free Comic Book Day in May. That's why Free Comic Book Day is in May, because of it tied in with that movie.
And now Marvel's putting out what may be the best Spider-Man movie ever made.
And they're going to do it in the summertime.
They're going to do it later than Guardians of the Galaxy. That's how much faith they have in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
With Spider-Man, it's like, the problem with sequels is sequels always do the business on the reviews of the last movie. So if your last movie stinks, it might make a lot of money, but then the next one suffers.
Right.
Batman Begins did not make as much money as any of the other Batman movies because the last one was Batman and Robin 8 years before.
Yeah.
But people went, that last Batman movie sucked, I don't want to go. So probably what Marvel's thinking is people are going, that one with Jamie Foxx's Electro sucked.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're not as excited as where Guardians of the Galaxy. That last one was great.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's go see that. So it's not even a brand awareness.
No.
At this point. It's always how good was the last one. It doesn't matter when it happened, and it doesn't matter how much money it made.
And that's an artifact of the fact that these movies are not being pitched at the hardcore geeks as much as they are being pitched at your casual blockbuster moviegoer.
Yeah. Because there's more of them than there are hardcore geeks.
And that's how
geeks.
It should be. Because at least with Marvel, they're not stepping all over our feelings or whatever.
Like DC.
Like DC is. And, you know, we always go back to taking a dump on DC, and we'll see, because that we did that Wonder Woman trailer looks phenomenal. Looks
and great. There was news this week. Justice League 2 has been pushed back, and Batman has been pushed up.
Mm. So that means we're getting
Batman before we're getting that second Justice League.
Yeah.
And originally, they were supposed to shoot both of those at the same time. And now I think this is the fallout from Batman versus Superman. They were already shooting Justice League when Batman versus Superman came out. Oh. So I think they're letting Zack Snyder finish the movie he's making, and then everybody's interested in Ben Affleck as Batman, and Batman is obviously does way better than anything else DC produces.
Property.
So get Ben Affleck out as Batman by himself as fast as possible, and then I wouldn't be surprised if Batman does like what the Nolan movies did,
right?
Which is huge. I wouldn't be surprised if they push up a Batman 2 before that Justice League 2. That's so crazy. they're running from this, which is good for us because they were going in the wrong direction,
right?
And anywhere away from that direction is good, even if it's silence,
right? Yeah, yeah, and they're having to retool everything. I mean, in the wake of Batman Superman, you could tell that was the watershed moment where DC said no.
Well, think too, Suicide Squad. Do you know? Did you guys see the honest trailer for Suicide Squad?
Yeah, it was
great. They eviscerated that movie. Yeah.
And you know what? They told us when Suicide Squad came out, they said, we're not doing a director's cut. And now the director's cut is the only thing coming out.
Right.
The Blu-ray has both cuts on it. Whereas a lot of movies, they would put out the movie first, and then about 3-6 months later, you'd get the director's cut.
Yeah.
They're just jumping to it because that movie was hacked to death.
Right. They said there were 19 different versions of that movie made. Isn't that fucking crazy? That
and there are characters that just appear and disappear.
Right.
Like
Slipknot.
Katana.
Yeah. Hey, so her sword, it has the power to trap your soul. Cool. Is that something we're going to see the sword do? No.
Yeah. Yeah, because obviously it happened and it got cut out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're realizing what happened. Like, Suicide Squad did better than Batman versus Superman, but none of these are doing as well as they hoped.
Well, because they changed it midstream. I mean, they did a panic reshooting schedule for
it was
Suicide
one thing.
Squad.
They tried to turn it into
Guardians
and Deadpool.
Yeah,
yeah.
They tried to turn it into that at the last minute, and you have these scenes that don't match one another in it.
Right.
I mean, it's confusing. And Joker's in it for 6 minutes after they built all their marketing on Joker.
And the sad thing is that the reshot movie probably works better than the original.
Well, we'll see, because I'm assuming that whatever that director's cut is going to be closer to the original than it was to the theatrical release.
Yeah.
Because we'll probably see a lot of those scenes that got cut out, because that movie was hacked to death. And, you know, I'm still the eternal optimist for DC. I could see this Ben Affleck Batman movie being fantastic.
I'm hoping for
Wonder Woman being really good.
Yeah.
It looks good. In fact, they've had a couple more trailers
come out. I think Justice League won't be that good.
No. Yeah, probably not.
Because it was too far down the road of this direction they're doing, which is also why they're backing off a second one.
Yeah.
But before we're running out of time, let's talk about a franchise that keeps getting forgotten.
Yeah,
and then every time it appears, we go, "Oh yeah, one of those." That's going to be
forgotten
great.
With good reason, I think.
I don't think it gets forgotten with good reason. So we got the trailer yesterday for War of the Planet of the Apes, and both of these movies were movies I was like, "Oh yeah, they're doing another Planet of the Apes." I liked that last one, and then I see it, I go, "I really like this movie," but I am not thinking about when is the next Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
ever.
It's one of those franchises when we see it, I'm like, oh yeah, they're making these, and I guess they're connected. Like, I didn't really think the James Franco one was, but it really is.
It's a totally sequel.
No, I know, because it's like the same characters. He's just not in it. But like,
and they're doing that again, because this one has Woody Harrelson in it, but it doesn't have any of the characters that were in the second one.
Right. It's kind of just following the monkey around. What's weird is
Curious George, which is following the monkey around.
Yeah.
Well, do you think the fact that it's a prequel hurts it?
No, because I think it's so far before. It's kind
of
like
it's like thousands of years.
Oh, yeah, it is, because
right?
It looks like it takes place, what, maybe? The first one took place in our time. And then the next one was like 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I think this is maybe
25.
If it's 20 or 18 years ahead of us, I'd be shocked.
But that original Charlton Heston film is 1,000 years in the future.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like they have to get to that point.
And they're doing what J.J. Abrams did with Star Trek. They're having their cake and eating it too. They're doing a modern version that's a prequel that still lines up to the original in some way.
Yeah.
Even more, because Star Trek, you know, they created an alternate timeline to do whatever they wanted. This, like, both of those movies, I'm like, yeah, we could still have that 1968 Charlton Heston movie in exactly the same way.
Yeah, but Planet of the Apes didn't have to worry about bringing the actual Charlton Heston back in the same way that Star Trek had to deal with Leonard Nimoy.
But you know, it was great for the first movie, but that second movie where they just use him like Wikipedia. Yeah.
That's so dumb. They shouldn't have.
No, third movie was better when they acknowledged that he passed away.
Yeah,
he passed away before the movie was made, or they didn't?
Or during the making of it. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, Anton Yelchin passed away after. No, but there's two or three scenes where Zachary Quinto has to deal with the fact that his older self is gone.
Yeah.
So the Planet of the Apes, it's like, I always forget they're coming out because I don't ever think that there's more of those movies to keep making. Because I thought when they made the James Franco, I'm like, oh, that's it. Here's how the monkeys got smart. And then they did the next one. I'm like, here's how the monkeys took over the city. Now the next one's, here's how the monkeys take over the planet. It's like, how many more do they keep making? But like,
as many that will make money.
I guess, as long as they make money.
I guess they make money, and I guess that's great. But I don't really ever care about those movies.
No, I don't either. But when I see them, I think they're great. I buy the Blu-ray. Every time I see them, I go, these movies are really good.
Yeah.
And like I said, it doesn't stick in my brain afterwards. I don't leave going, what's the next one going to be? When's it coming out? I can't even tell you what year the last movie. I keep forgetting which one is Dawn, which one is Rise.
Yeah.
I can't tell them apart. I know what the stories are. I know we covered the second one on the podcast, so it wasn't that long ago.
Right. But yeah, because I remember we did an episode of, like, I think we had to see it in the theater, and it's weird because it's just, they always just feel like weird movies to cover just because it's like,
they're big franchise sci-fi movies.
Yeah. I mean, it makes
sense. But they're not big, like, Marvel.
Well, but I think we should cover, like, sci-fi stuff, I think, but I'm saying they can make as many as they want. It's like Transformers movies, you know? We got the...
Well, it's not Transformers movies.
Well, I'm saying that's how I feel about it as a franchise. I'm sure the quality is better than Transformers movies because those are dumpster fires movies. But like the next Transformers trailer I watched, it looks awesome, but I don't care about Transformers at all. Right. And I kind of put this in the same venue.
I saw that first Transformers and didn't care at all, and I never went back.
No, I didn't either, but I'm saying it's just like...
Well, the second one was worse than the first one.
And then I heard the third one was worse than that.
I think they are progressively getting worse, but they're going to make like 12 of those movies.
They always make money.
And they make a bunch of money because the
13-year-olds go see it.
Oh, yeah,
they make enough money in that opening weekend.
But it's just like...
So it's not even a nostalgia factor if young kids are going to it, because they didn't grow up with Transformers.
They just want
to
see giant
robots. But the thing about Planet of the Apes I like is that quality, because honestly, these shouldn't be doing any better than, say, Terminator Genesis or Prometheus, which weren't good.
Movies I just completely forget that they keep making Terminators.
They're making a sequel to Prometheus, and I didn't like that first one at all.
I'll watch anything with Fassbender in it.
He's good. I mean, and Charlize Theron's good, but like that movie story-wise just collapses on itself.
Speaking of Planet of the Apes, so IDW and DC have a very nice relationship. You know, it's been going back a couple years. They did like Green Lantern meets Star Trek.
Yeah, that Star Trek Planet of the Apes too.
Star Trek Planet of the Apes, right? I
think it was called the Primate Directive.
It was. they're doing a Green Lantern Planet of the Apes crossover, and the cover is a monkey with the ring like on his paw, like holding it up behind all the Green Lanterns. It's like, that's the kind of stuff. Yes, cross the comics over with as many of these things as you want to do, because I want to see a monkey Green Lantern fighting like Guy Gardner.
It's a franchise I want to be alive, and I want it to be good. It doesn't have to be the biggest thing in the world.
Right.
It doesn't even have to crack.
It's got a nice, comfortable slot.
Yeah, it doesn't have to crack the top 10 of box office.
Right.
But like, Planet of the Apes is the first major sci-fi franchise in film history. I think you go back before that, you're talking about horror. You're talking about Frankenstein and Dracula. And sci-fi movies were all one-offs before Planet of the Apes. They're the first ones to just keep doing sequels. And this does feel like there's a bigger story they're telling. Whereas the original Planet of the Apes movies, they had to like figure out how to create another one. They were like alien movies. They blew up the whole world in the second one.
They kept writing themselves into a corner.
Exactly, and they're not doing that with this. They're telling this bigger story, which could be six movies, could end with this third one. And as long as they're good, I'm okay with them making more.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
All right, so this week, a buddy of mine, I don't know if I'll use names because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I was given a device that has all of Westworld on it.
Have you guys
watched this at all, Westworld?
Yes, I've been watching it week to week. I finished it as well.
So I'm on episode like 3 or 4. It is awesome. It's a great show. This is like, it's like, I'm like obsessed with the show now. It's very good. Everyone in it's very good. The designs are awesome. Like the way they figured out what they're doing is great. Joe, do you know the premise? If you talk about the premise of this? Yeah. So the premise is really cool. The only thing that's dumb about it is so they're in like a big theme park. It's a real place you can go, and it's all this stuff, and it's very expensive and all this. We are, as a society, headed towards stuff like that, but the idea that it's a theme park and not a virtual reality is the problem. And I get why, because it's much more interesting if it's a real place you can go, but we're going to do this with like computers in our head. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, we're not going to build robots that are going to do this. It'll all be virtual reality, and it'll be a complete sensory immersion.
Yes, but maybe
like the Matrix.
I could see society being at a point that where everyone has virtual reality at home, and actually being in a physical place and being able to touch robots that look people might be worth. They said it costs like $40,000 a day to go there.
Oh, is that what it says in the show?
Yeah, they mentioned that in the show, like how much it costs.
Okay, because I'm in like the fourth episode, so I haven't gotten to that.
So it's possible that like,
but I'm saying like
because it's so real.
But the virtual reality will probably get to a point where we won't be able to tell what's real and not. That's what that's like where we're going if we don't blow ourselves up.
I disagree because you won't be able to touch it. You won't be able to smell. It's always going to be sight and sound, virtual reality.
No, I'm saying
as much as the holodecks.
They'll do that stuff too.
Yeah,
they'll get to that point.
That you're creating your own sci-fi right there.
No, I'm just saying, I think that's much more realistic than let's build a million robots of people that have like fleshy vaginas and stuff.
It's like
everything's accurate. It's really ridiculous.
I liked Westworld until I realized it was just Battlestar Galactica with a bigger budget.
Yeah, I actually, you know, it's funny, I was watching episode 4 or 5 yesterday and I was like, I want to go back and watch Battlestar Galactica. I haven't seen that in a while. Yeah. And I don't think I ever finished it. But it's good. I highly, highly recommend it. Very smart show. This is the show that when Game of Thrones ends, all the people that are watching Game of Thrones are going to pacify themselves with this show.
Well, they said it's getting the ratings that are pretty close to Game of Thrones.
Right.
And they've greenlit season 2 already.
Right. It's doing really well.
And it is an expensive show. There's a lot of people in it. They're outside all the time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You can always tell if a show has a big budget by the amount of times they go outside.
Right, yeah. Location shooting.
Yeah, and they're always outside in the show. But it's cool. It's like it got a great cast. Anthony Hopkins is awesome in it, and the other old guy in it, the famous guy.
Ed Harris.
He's great in it. They just met in the show on, like, I don't know, one of the episodes they talk, and it's great. It's a great show. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, Evan Rachel Wood is fantastic in it.
Yeah.
She's in my opinion, the perfect type of actress, because everything I've seen her in, she looks completely different.
I don't even know what else I've seen her
in. She was in, did you see The Wrestler, the Mickey Rourke movie? She's the daughter.
Incredible.
Wow.
She's great, and she's so, so good in this. My thing is kind of weird and crazy and a little old. So I've been on this huge Spider-Man kick, and for some reason, it popped into my head that I have never heard the Spider-Man musical.
Yeah.
And there's no way to see the Spider-Man musical anymore, so I just went on iTunes and bought the album. The important thing is that all of the songs are written by Bono and the Edge. So when you listen to the album... And
that's not too meta for you.
No.
That's not too meta for you.
Worlds are...
But if Doctor Strange and Iron Man... make a Sherlock
you put your
joke.
Chocolate in my peanut butter. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's
that's too far.
Well, worlds are colliding for me personally, and I'm like,
that's what I'm saying.
This is
so many intersections for you.
So it's something I have to actually experience. So I listened to it, and I guess without watching like the giant fey Green Goblin and being afraid that Spider-Man would fall on me without like taking away all the visual of it, it's not really a musical, because they didn't quite know how to write a musical, and the songs don't really push the story forward. And there's only like, there's 12 songs on the album and there's about 15 songs in the show. So there's a couple songs that aren't even in it, but it's more of a concept album. And it reminded me very much of the Prince Batman soundtrack. Where, like, when you listen to the Prince Batman soundtrack, and I think we talked about this for about 20 minutes the week Prince died, but the Prince Batman soundtrack is, like, he thinks it's about Batman.
Yeah.
But, like, no one else you, does. Yeah, so you listen to it, and you're like, ah, so Joker is a party man? And Batman's seen the future, and it will be? And this album's like that, where they're clearly U2 songs.
Right.
But there was not a single moment where Bono sat down at a desk and wrote a lyric that said, "When Dr. Octopus's metal arms hit me, they hurt."
Right.
There's no lines about radioactive spiders. There's nothing about designing a web shooter. There's nothing about Norman Osborn. They're all Bono lyrics about love and rising.
And Jesus.
Yeah, there's nothing about, oh crap, now I have to go waste this perfect opportunity to have to be a superhero.
Yeah, no, they're all just U2 songs that are kind of about Spider-Man. I actually had a joke in my stand-up when they were writing it that said, Bono's writing a Spider-Man musical, and in it, Spider-Man will fight the Green Goblin, Dr. Octopus, and Africa's Foreign Debt.
Yeah.
And the album kind of bears that out. So I find it really fascinating. I played a little for Steven. Steven said, "This is the worst thing I've ever heard."
I wouldn't willingly do that to my ears again. Do you know what I mean?
But there are songs on it that would be great U2 songs. Like, when I hear them, I'm like, this shouldn't be performed on a stage by an 18-year-old kid who looks like Peter Parker. This should be performed in the middle of a stadium after With or Without You.
You know what? You guys, you need to do a cover.
Oh,
your band needs to cover.
I've already figured out where I can drop in lyrics on other songs.
Yeah,
because okay. part of the staple of a U2 live show is that he'll start singing other songs like as they jam on a song. So I've been doing that for a while, and then I've also figured out like where to drop in songs that we don't do.
Yeah.
In the middle of other songs like Easter eggs, and I've already figured out. I'm like, you know what? This lyric is going to go right here, and we'll try that out.
But it's just like, you got to convince those guys to do at least one of the songs from the thing.
We do like learning obscure ones.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're going to
learn who the real U2 fans in your audience are. Who they know.
There's always a couple. Yeah. So I'm really fascinated by it, and I've listened to it about 3 or 4 times, and it's not the best U2 album, but it's definitely better than some of their weaker albums.
Yeah.
So, as I said, I would have loved to have seen the show. There's no way that's possible. It was the most expensive show ever produced. It flopped. We're not seeing it again. And they couldn't even tour it because Spider-Man would swing out over the audience. They had to pick a theater that could support his weight. Yeah. So they can't go to then Chicago and LA and
right.
Toronto.
Here's the thought.
Yeah.
If they want to do a Spider-Man Broadway show so bad, why make it extra hard and do it as a fucking musical? Why not just make a Spider-Man Broadway show?
Because all the big Broadway shows are musicals. Musicals are the blockbusters of shows. People don't go see plays. Like, yeah. Without music. No.
That's true.
No,
musicals
shit.
Are the blockbusters.
This is how uncultured I am.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you know, they turned The Producers into a musical.
Right.
You know, they turned Young Frankenstein into a musical.
Holy Grail.
Hamilton
into a musical.
Is a musical.
Yeah. Hamilton was written as a musical,
yeah.
Which actually started all that because I was watching a documentary on Hamilton and I was like, oh, I want to see that. And then I want to listen to that. I was like, oh, you know what other musical I haven't listened to? As I'm on issue 140 of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So,
as a resident comic book historian, a lot of times when something new comes out, it sends me scurrying back in time to find out where it came from or other iterations of it. And with Doctor Strange recently coming out, and with rumors that Cloak and Dagger are now going to be
on Netflix. Yeah.
That naturally sent me back to Strange Tales, when there was a time where Cloak and Dagger and Doctor Strange were sharing the same book.
Was
now
it
their
a
stories
book?
It was not a team up book.
Okay, so
now,
it was like
you would have a Cloak and Dagger.
It was like
story.
Strange Tales used to be or Tales of Suspense.
With Nick
right.
Fury
yeah,
and
they each had 12-page stories.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's awesome.
And some of those stories were really fun. I mean they especially the Doctor Strange stuff. I mean the Cloak and Dagger stuff was pretty much
who was
what
doing
you would
it?
Expect. A variety of people.
So there wasn't really a standard team on it. They kind of passed it off.
Yeah, they're kind of, you know, passing it around. The artwork changes, you know, every once in a while. They had, you know, they would use the same team for maybe two or three issues, and then go on to somebody else.
Around the same time, they did that solo Avengers book where they would do a 12-page Hawkeye story, and then the second,
and then somebody else.
The second one was somebody else, and they always rotate it.
Yeah. Right. And this one is just like these little standalone snippets. Like you said, 12 pages, and that was about it. The Cloak and Dagger stuff had a story arc. The Doctor Strange stuff didn't, which I found really fascinating. But it was just a really fun book. I mean, sometimes those C and D titles can be a lot of fun because, especially with Doctor Strange, he hadn't been around in a while. You know, this was like post-Defenders.
Yeah, Doctor Strange has a hard time sustaining his own
book. He has a lot of, like, gaps. He's one of those characters that kind of disappears for a while, you know?
And, he can't really hold his own book, although the movie might change that. We'll see. The current Doctor Strange is really awesome.
Yeah, in fact, there are two separate ongoing Doctor Strange books right now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, I would never expect that.
Yeah, but if you can go back and find these Strange Tales, and if you go to a Mighty Con or something like that, you will find them in the 50 cent to a dollar bins. They're not very expensive.
Yeah.
But go back. They're definitely worth it. If you like the Doctor Strange movie, you'll really like these.
Nice. Yeah, and I don't see that being turned into a trade. And if it did, it wouldn't have both stories in it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you would either get one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, even the Tales of Suspense, there's no Tales of Suspense omnibus. There's a Captain America omnibus, and there's an Iron Man omnibus that have double the issues that a normal one would
have. Yeah, even the Nick Fury and the Doctor Strange are two separate omnibuses.
I have them all. Well, thanks for listening. If you want to argue with us, I'm getting more arguments these days, and I like that. I'm getting fact checkers. I like it.
Yeah, fact checkers. We like facts.
Tell me I'm wrong, because I'm not doing the research. You can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That is the official Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. You can like us on Facebook. That's where we posted all these trailers and any news item that we think you might want to know about. And you can listen to every episode either on iTunes or on Stitcher. I believe there's a couple of other streams that pick us up. And you can listen to every episode all going all the way back on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com.
And you can reach me, Joe Pakovitz. I'm Zen Master Guy on Twitter.
And I am at, not so much anymore, but mostly you can find me at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!